Well, okay, it's December 4th. I had one false start there. I was recording the wrong screen. It's December 4th, 1700 hours now. This is Ward Green, and I've just done a massive laundry with shirts, a lot of shirts. And I've got to fold them, but I thought I'd better do my video before I start the folding, because it could take a while, and that way I can upload while I'm folding. But I'd like to start today with this song, which was performed by Yoshio Stefan live in Germany in 2018. It was Yoshio with his compatriot or fellow guitar player, that is, Richard Smith. And Yoshio's father is also there playing rhythm guitar, and they have their bass player and their fiddle player. I don't know too much about those two. But this is Honeysuckle Rose, and yesterday's song was Quien Será. But this is Honeysuckle Rose. Okay, it doesn't start at the very beginning of the song either. This is it here, I guess, right? Is it right here? Masa Dorada. Right there. Here we go. Thank you.
Hello everyone, Ruhi Chenet here. They were born with one of the rare...
Just masterful musicians playing great music. Pleasure to listen to. It just raises the spirits every time. The other thing I wanted to share, though, is another video from Ruhi Chenet. Ruhi Chenet makes documentary films. He made that film about the world's smallest woman, or shortest woman, and he also made one about the world's tallest man, which is this one? This one. In this video, we see the world's tallest man. At some point, has his picture taken with the world's shortest woman, and you can see the comparison. Maybe that's in the other video, actually. Might not be in this video. But this video is a very interesting video. The world's tallest man wants world peace or people to live in harmony with each other. But here's another video where there's a pair of, I don't know how do you describe this? He didn't even give it a title. See that? He didn't give it a title. Because it's difficult to say. It's a person with two heads, but it's a person who has more than two heads. He's got two heads and two upper bodies as well. It looks like he's got two sets of arms completely, but I'm not sure if that's true. But so it's two people with one pair of legs, and they're conjoined at birth. And so this is the story of those two. They walk, even though one of them controls one of the legs and the other one controls the other leg and has no feeling for the opposite leg. So neither of them feels their opposite leg, and each one only controls one of their legs.
Medical conditions in the world.
Parents di thodi halat theek nahi si ohanu leke nahi ja sakde si.
They share a stomach, a liver, a bladder and anus together. The hearts, lungs and brains of Sohna and Mohna Singh brothers are separate and their own.
So this leg is yours?
My Mohna.
And this is yours?
Yes.
What about the middle? When I touch, who feels?
Two.
You feel same?
Same.
So it's like when you draw a line from here, you are the controller of this part and you control the other part?
Yes.
Okay, so you separate from that invisible line. Are you feeling this?
Yes.
You're not feeling it? You don't feel this? Never? Who is feeling this?
Same.
Same?
Yes.
Who is feeling this? Still same?
No same.
No same? You lost the sensation here?
Yes.
You have same genital?
Yes.
You feel same?
Same.
They were born into a poor family in Delhi, India, and were abandoned shortly after their birth. Pingalwara Association raised them.
This is where you connect.
But now they are 19 years old.
Here, both of their spines extend parallel to the same hip. It's clear from the thickness that there are two.
Can you jump?
My weight is heavy.
Can you run?
No, run. Heartbeat is fast.
The brothers, who carry two legs and four arms together, coexist in perfect harmony and can do daily tasks together.
Yes, so they have four arms and two legs, but they walk through their cooperation because only one of them controls one leg. I mean, each one of them only controls one leg.
So guys, this is your room.
They can climb. They can write. They can go downstairs. And they can go to work with their electric vehicle. Mohana is responsible for the brake, Sohna for the accelerator pedal, and they control the steering together. Here, two different human brains communicate and coordinate within milliseconds.
You are working as an electrician?
Yes.
How much salary do you earn?
20,000.
Do you get two salaries?
One salary.
Do you have separate wallets?
No, single wallet.
But you have separate identities, right?
Identity. Yes. Separate identities.
What do you think about marriage? Do you want to get married in the future?
No. Yes.
With
but,
the same person?
Same. Age is 25 and 26, 30. After 25 years.
Do you guys want to marry the same person?
Yes. Same person marriage.
Is there any jealousy between you?
Kyunki assi rehna ta ikatthe hi hai, sari umar te jealousy karan da koi fayda nahi. Haan gallan hundiyan, kam prati gallan hundiyan va zyada, jaan apniyan aapas ch koi free time gallan baatan kar lendi.
Are there any times that you don't talk to each other?
No. Kyunki time hi nahi inna hunda. Schedule is very busy.
Did you ever fight?
Haan bachpan ch ki pata koi hoyi hove par yaad nahi.
You said that you're going to marry the same person.
Yes.
But what if one of you doesn't like her?
No.
What kind of girls do you like? What is your type?
The twins wear two different t-shirts by having them sewn side by side at the tailor. The destinies of these two wheels stuck in a single body are so interconnected that if one of them commits a crime and goes to jail, it will affect the fate of the other one.
What happens when you do want to do different things? For example, one of you wants to sleep and the other one wants to be awake. How do you decide?
In the basketball machine game, Sohna did not give Mohna a chance, but when Mohna got the ball, he scored with a single try.
Go for it. Wow.
Do either one of you have a dominant character? Who makes the decisions?
ਕੋਈ ਵੀ ਫੈਸਲਾ ਲੈਣਾ ਹੋਵੇ ਜਾਂ ਮੋਨਾ ਵੀ ਲੈ ਲੈਂਦਾ ਜਾਂ ਮੈਂ ਵੀ ਲੈ ਲੈਂਦਾ ਸੋਨਾ ਵੀ ਲੈ ਲੈਂਦਾ ਕੋਈ ਵੀ ਲੈ ਲੈਂਦਾ ਫੈਸਲਾ
Who is more dominant?
No, I'm not clever. Some clever, some intelligent is same brain.
Your intelligence level is normal?
Normal. No high, no, average.
Who is more social then? I think Sohna is.
Yes.
I think you are more social.
Yes.
In a sitting position, Sohna usually pushes Mohna down. Although Mohna feels uncomfortable and tries to equalize the situation, Sohna is higher in his natural position and Mohna lives with a crooked vision.
Have you ever been in love?
No, no girlfriend.
Have you ever fallen in love with same person maybe?
Yes. No. Because there is no time enough. I was very busy.
So you have the same phone or you have separate phones?
Same phone.
You are playing together then?
Yes. No, I am not playing. Mona is playing.
What are you doing when he is playing?
I was sitting there.
Do you feel the hunger at the same time?
Yes. This is a genetic problem. If I have a fever, it will be 8 hours.
If you eat something unhealthy, it goes to the same stomach. It can make him fat. Do you watch out your diet?
Because their blood circulation is the same, when one twin eats a sugary food, the other's blood sugar level rises as well. If one of them is brain dead, it may not be possible for the other one to survive due to possible complications. Sohna and Mohna got all the attention the moment we went outside. Shortly after they were born in Delhi in 2003, they were transferred to All India Institute of Medical Sciences Hospital in the hope of separation surgery. But the procedure was not started when the doctor said that the separation surgery would cause to the death of a twin.
If you had the choice to be separated, would you take that choice?
No, I am not separated. I God is God gifted. ਰੱਬ ਨੇ ਜੋ ਬਣਾ ਤਾ ਬਹੁਤ ਵਧੀਆ ਤੇ ਇਹਦੇ 'ਚ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਲੋਕ ਬਹੁਤ ਪਿਆਰ ਕਰਦੇ ਅਤੇ ਰੱਬ ਨੇ ਇਹੋ ਜਿਹਾ ਸਰੀਰ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਅਤੇ ਬਹੁਤ ਵਧੀਆ ਮਹਿਸੂਸ
ਕਰਦੇ
ਸਾਨੂੰ ਬਹੁਤ ਵਧੀਆ ਮਹਿਸੂਸ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਕਿ ਅਸੀਂ ਇੱਕ ਦੂਜੇ ਨਾਲ ਆਪਸ 'ਚ ਕੰਜਵਾਇਣ ਜੁੜੇ ਹੋਏ ਹਾਂ ਅਤੇ ਬਹੁਤ ਵਧੀਆ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਕਿ ਦੂਜੇ ਨਾਲ ਰਹਿੰਦੇ
ਵਟ ਇਜ਼ ਯੋਰ ਲਾਈਫ ਗੋਲ ਵਟ ਡੂ ਯੂ ਵਾਂਟ ਟੂ ਬਿਕਮ
ਸਿੰਗਿੰਗ ਸਿੰਗਰ ਲਾਈਕ ਸਿੰਗਰ ਸਿੰਗਿੰਗ ਲਾਈਕ ਅਰੀਜੀਤ ਸਿੰਘ ਜੇ ਤੁਹਾਡੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਕੰਮ ਕਰਨ ਦੀ ਚਾਹਤ ਹੈ ਬੰਦੇ ਦੇ ਮਨ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਇਹ ਨਹੀਂ ਆਉਣਾ ਚਾਹੀਦਾ ਇਹ ਕੀ ਹੋਣਾ ਜਾਂ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੋਣਾ ਇਹ ਡਬਲ ਮਾਈਂਡਡ ਹੋ ਗਿਆ ਪਰ ਕੁਛ ਵੀ ਪੋਸੀਬਲ ਨਹੀਂ ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਵਿੱਚ ਬੇਰੁਜ਼ਗਾਰ ਨਾ ਬਣੋ ਰੁਜ਼ਗਾਰ ਕਰੋ ਪੜ੍ਹੋ ਲਿਖੋ ਅਤੇ ਕੰਮ ਕਰੋ ਅਤੇ ਇੰਨੀਆਂ ਬੇਨਤੀਆਂ ਚਰਨਾਂ 'ਚ ਪ੍ਰਵਾਨ ਕਰੋ.
Apparently, Mohna has a more inquisitive personality and he does not hesitate to touch things whenever he gets the chance. Sohna, on the other hand, is more dominant and their common smartphone is under his control. He answers the calls. The result of the analysis of our dialogue shows that while the twins use a total of 414 words, 65% of these words were said by Sohna. The interesting thing is that Sohna and Mohna said the same 81 words together. In about 20% of their conversations, their brains thought alike. The brothers who can walk without falling or drive without crashing by managing the right and left legs separately, learn to coordinate in a natural process. Although they work as electricians, they live with the dream of becoming a musician. Twins who want to bring visibility to the life they live actually have a meaning far beyond their different looks. They are different people with different personalities with different purposes. I have a request from you. You can like this video in two ways. One has a cost. It's the thanks button. Of course, along with the paid likes, there are also free likes. Hit that free like so I can see.
So there we go. That was a very, very interesting video about two people in one body, really. Two people who were conjoined at birth and who are apparently grateful for the life they have together. They believe in working hard, that's good, and they want to be singers. They want to be singers, but they're currently working as electricians, but they get one salary between the two of them, as I understand it. So let's see what we can do now with regard to the... Let's see what I can do here. There we go. That's what I want, I think. And today's study is for all the little children, and as was the music and the videos, as they were also for all of my little children, all of Jehovah's little children, really, all of Jehovah's little children. To the director, it says, A Melody of David. This is Psalm 64. Hear, O God, my voice in my concern. Let's pray first. Jehovah. Yes, I was thinking about what to pray for, Father, yesterday, and I think we should always say how grateful we are and thankful we are to you, Father, for all the things that you give us, so that we're not always merely asking, but we're also giving thanks for the things that we do have. But we pray that you would guide us in our efforts to learn more about you as we study Psalm 64. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Psalm 64, hear, O God. It's another one from David. Hear, O God. David sings, hear, O God, my voice in my concern. From the dreadfulness of the enemy, may you safeguard my life. May you conceal me from the confidential talk of evildoers, from the tumult of practicers of hurtfulness, who have sharpened their tongue just like a sword, who have aimed their arrow, bitter speech, to shoot from concealed places at someone blameless. All of a sudden, they shoot at him and do not fear. They hold themselves down to bad speech. They make statements about hiding traps. They have said, who sees them? They keep searching out unrighteous things. They have hidden a shrewd device, well searched out, and the inward part of each one, even his heart, is deep. But God will shoot at them with an arrow suddenly. Wounds have resulted to them, and they cause one to stumble. But their tongue is against their own selves. All those looking upon them will shake their head, and all earthling men will become afraid. And they will tell of the activity of God, and they will certainly have insight into his work. And the righteous one will rejoice in Jehovah and will indeed take refuge in him. And all the upright in heart will boast. That was Psalm 64. It's a fairly short psalm, 10 verses, only 10 verses. So David says in verse 10 that the righteous one will rejoice in Jehovah and take refuge also in Jehovah. All the upright in heart will boast. Evidently, they boast in Jehovah too, as we know that, that's the way that we're instructed to boast, is in Jehovah. We don't boast in ourselves, but we do boast in Jehovah, according to the way that Jehovah instructs us to do. And David prays for safety from his enemy. He's got some pretty bad enemies. He calls them dreadful in verse 1. And also there's this confidential talk. Evidently, people are talking about David behind his back. Confidentially, they're saying things about him. He wants to be concealed from that kind of talk, because it would be very hurtful if he were to hear that, of course. And he likens bitter speech in verse 3 to be, he likens it to a sword or an arrow. It's sharp, it hurts. So it's like a sword or an arrow. The words that are spoken against someone blameless, and which are bitter. Bitter speech is painful to hear. If somebody's sharpened their tongue, so to speak, by thinking up something harmful that they could say about someone else, it's painful for those who actually hear it. So David says, may you conceal me in verse 2 from that talk, that kind of talk, which could be very painful. And even they talk about hiding traps and say in verse 5, who sees these hiding traps? They seem to take delight in the fact that they have traps and that they can catch people in these traps. and catch them unawares because no one sees these traps, they think. But in verse 7, God will exact retribution upon those people. And then you notice the perfect form of the verb. In prophecy, it always takes the form of past tense. Wounds have resulted to them. Well, we could equally well translate that wounds will result to them, because there is no past or future tense in Hebrew. It's got to do with perfect and imperfect, and this is a prophecy, so it's written as though it has already occurred, but it's not necessarily past tense. It's prophetic. And I thought of something else, too, to do with the preaching work, of course. When we're using a particular translation, it's not, to my mind, the preaching work, it's really the ministry, I should say, the ministry, which is really the preaching work in large measure, but it includes other acts of kindness. But the ministry is done insofar as the preaching part of it. It's not really necessary to adhere to a particular translation in the preaching work. It's always better to share with somebody words in the form that they best understand, whatever that is. So in whatever language or idiom the people understand, that's the language with which we want to speak to people. It's like where Paul wrote about when in Rome, is that an expression in the Bible? I'm not sure. I'll look it up, I think, online. Let's look it up online. The expression's very famous. When in Rome, do as the Romans. Bible. And then we look it up and see what it is. Oh. No. I'm thinking of something else, though. In all things, no, it's in Corinthians, I remember now. When in Rome, do as the Romans, but I know what to search. Okay. Paul writes about that I may all means gain some. By all means gain some. Let's look at that. 1 Corinthians 9 and 22. There it is, yeah. Paul wrote, in other words, just as Paul explained it here in 1 Corinthians, he says, to the Jews I became as a Jew in verse 20, 1 Corinthians 9 and 20. To the Jews I became as a Jew. To those without law I became as without law. Verse 21, so we become whatever we have to become. Verse 22, to the weak I became weak. And then he says, I have become all things to people of all sorts, that I might by all means save some. Even if we do this, we're not going to save everybody, but we try to become whatever we have to become in order to reach people's hearts, and that's how we save some. So that's the idea of preaching. It's not got to do with sticking with a certain particular translation or other translation or anything like that. It's got to do with using the principles in the Bible to help people in such a way that we might bring them into a better state of awareness of what love is about and what God is like as a person and what they can do better or how they can be happier. That's really what we're attempting to do in preaching. The way I see it, certainly, but I think Jehovah is in line with that as well. That's why I mention it. But Isaiah, so it's not really about sticking to a particular translation. So I'm not going to go out. For example, I'm not going to take a literal Bible translation and go. I'm not going to quote from a literal Bible translation unless I feel that that's exactly what the person needs. I will paraphrase, or I will completely paraphrase in order to reach somebody with a Bible idea from a scripture, you know, from a verse. I won't use the literal verse, no matter what kind of translation it is, if it's not the right message for that person. That's what I was trying to say when I was talking about, but when I choose to use a literal translation for teaching, that's the basis for reading, the scripture, so that we get a foundation. If we're going to read the scriptures, I feel like it should be the literal translation. We need to learn that before we do anything else. We can learn idiomatic translations either, you know, later on or alongside, but we should focus on, I believe, the literal translation, because that's the basis for the original language, the way it was written in the original language, that is, the scriptures. To learn those scriptures in the original literal translation is going to be closer. It's going to give us more insight into the original intent of the author. That's why I believe it's better to use a literal translation for reading, for example, and possibly some other things too, but these things are revealed to me, you know, every night, as it says in Psalms 19, I believe it is, right? Every night shows forth knowledge. Now, Isaiah chapter 44, and now listen, O Jacob, my servant, and you, O Israel, whom I have chosen. This is what Jehovah has said, your maker and your former, who kept helping you even from the belly. Do not be afraid, O my servant Jacob, and you, Jeshurun, whom I have chosen, for I shall pour out water upon the thirsty one, and trickling streams upon the dry place. I shall pour out my spirit upon your seed, and my blessing upon your descendants. And they will certainly spring up as among the green grass, like poplars by the water ditches. This one will say, I belong to Jehovah. And that one will call himself by the name of Jacob. And another will write upon his hand, belonging to Jehovah. And by the name of Israel, one will betitle himself. This is what Jehovah has said, the King of Israel and the repurchaser of him, Jehovah of armies. I am the first, and I am the last. And besides me, there is no God. And who is there like me? Let him call out, that he may tell it and present it to me. From when I appointed the people of long ago, both the things coming and the things that will enter in, let them tell on their part. Do not be in dread, you people, and do not become stupefied. Have I not from that time on caused you individually to hear and hold it out? Told it out. And you are my witnesses. Does there exist a God besides me? No, there is no rock. I have recognized none. The formers of the carved image are all of them an unreality, and their darlings themselves will be of no benefit. And as their witnesses, they see nothing and know nothing, in order that they may be ashamed. Who has formed a God or cast a mere molten image? Of no benefit at all has it been. Look, all his partners themselves will be ashamed. And the craftsmen are from earthling men. They will all of them collect themselves together. They will stand still. They will be in dread. They will be ashamed at the same time. As for the carver of iron with the billhook, he has been busy at it with the coals, and with the hammers he proceeds to form it, and he keeps busy at it with his powerful arm. Also, he has become hungry, and so without power. He has not drunk water, so he gets tired. As for the wood carver, he has stretched out the measuring line. He traces it out with red chalk. He works it up with a wood scraper, and with a compass he keeps tracing it out, and gradually he makes it like the representation of a man, like the beauty of mankind, to sit in a house. There is one whose business is to cut down cedars, and he takes a certain species of tree, even a massive tree, and he lets it become strong for himself among the trees of the forest. He planted the laurel tree, and the pouring rain itself keeps making it get big. And it has become something for man to keep a fire burning. So he takes part of it that he may warm himself. In fact, he builds a fire and actually bakes bread. He also works on a god to which he may bow down. He has it made into a carved image, and he prostrates himself to it. Half of it he actually burns up in a fire. Upon half of it he roasts well the flesh that he eats, and he becomes satisfied. He also warms himself and says, "Aha! I have warmed myself. I have seen the firelight." But the remainder of it he actually makes into a god itself, into his carved image. He prostrates himself to it and bows down and prays to it and says, "Deliver me, for you are my God." They have not come to know, nor do they understand, because their eyes have been besmeared so as not to see, their heart so as to have no insight, and no one recalls to his heart or has knowledge or understanding, saying, "The half of it I have burned up in a fire, and upon its coals I have also baked bread, I roast flesh and eat, but the rest of it shall I make into a mere detestable thing? To the dried out wood of a tree shall I prostrate myself?" He is feeding on ashes. His own heart that has been trifled with has led him astray, and he does not deliver his soul, nor does he say, "Is there not a falsehood in my right hand?" Remember these things, O Jacob, and you, O Israel, because you are my servant. I have formed you. You are a servant belonging to me. O Israel, you will not be forgotten on my part. I will wipe out your transgressions just as with a cloud, and your sins just as with a cloud mass. Do return to me, for I will repurchase you. Joyfully cry out, you heavens, for Jehovah has taken action. Shout in triumph, all you lowest parts of the earth. Become cheerful, you mountains, with joyful outcry, you forest and all you trees in it. For Jehovah has repurchased Jacob, and on Israel he shows his beauty. This is what Jehovah has said, your repurchaser and the former of you from the belly. I, Jehovah, am doing everything, stretching out the heavens by myself, laying out the earth. Who was with me? I am frustrating the signs of the empty talkers, and I am the one that makes diviners themselves act crazily, the one turning wise men backwards, and the one that turns even their knowledge into foolishness, the one making the word of his servant come true, and the one that carries out completely the counsel of his own messengers, the one saying of Jerusalem, "She will be inhabited," and of the cities of Judah, "They will be rebuilt, and her desolated places I shall raise up." The one saying to the watery deep, "Be evaporated, and all your rivers I shall dry up." The one saying of Cyrus, "He is my shepherd, and all that I delight in, he will completely carry out." Even in my saying of Jerusalem, "She will be rebuilt," and of the temple, "You will have your foundation laid." That was Isaiah 44. This is a prophecy about Cyrus, who had not even come to be born yet, and he was prophesied about by Isaiah here, speaking by inspiration from Jehovah, speaking what Jehovah had said. This is what Jehovah had said, verse 24. All of this prophecy about what was to come, but also about Cyrus and about all of the things that Jehovah was saying here, or that Isaiah was writing, I should say. He was saying Jehovah said these things. He wasn't just saying it that he had said it. He's in verse 6, this is what Jehovah has said. In verse 2, this is what Jehovah has said. So all of this is what Jehovah has said. And so that's how Cyrus could have been prophesied about by Isaiah 200 years before the event. when Cyrus came and conquered Babylon and freed the Israelites from their prison at Babylon, from their having been held captive at Babylon. And they were captive there for a period of time from 597, when their captivity began, until 539, when Cyrus conquered Babylon. So that's a period of 58 years, it appears. It's 58 years, right. So they were held captive in Babylon for 58 years. But Cyrus was foretold to be their deliverer. But it's more than that. Also, it's where it says, "The one saying to the watery deep, be evaporated." The one saying to the watery deep, there in verse 27, be evaporated. Cyrus entered the city of Babylon. Using the fact that it had a river flowing through it, and Cyrus used the river to gain access to the city. And that was how he came in and got in without having to pass through the main gates. So somehow he was able to, I mean, we will have to research that some more, but it sounds like perhaps he, from this prophecy here, it makes me think that perhaps he was able to lower the water level of the river by damming it up somehow, so that he was able to enter through the waterway and get in on the banks of the river into the city of Babylon. Or perhaps the river was just lower than normal, so he was able to get in. But whatever the reason, he was able to get into the city by means of the river. So this seems appropriate also, this talking about the rivers at the point where it talks about Cyrus. And we've already covered the time in which Isaiah lived. It was 200 years before Cyrus. How could he even know his name? He couldn't have known his name. He didn't know his name in advance, 200 years. Cyrus wasn't born yet, certainly. So, but it's interesting because it even says in, I believe it's the next chapter of Isaiah. We're going to see, anyway. We're going to find out more about this, about what Jehovah is saying about Cyrus. We're going to learn a bit more about it. But Jehovah can do miracles like that in prophecy. He can foretell the name of someone. And also the fact that Cyrus was the one who declared that the temple would be rebuilt. After he saved the Israelites from Babylon, he declared that they should go up and rebuild the temple. So he, when Cyrus was shown this prophecy of Isaiah, it appears, he was inspired to make the very statement that they should lay the foundation of the temple and rebuild it. So he was, I mean, prophecy is not just foretelling events, it's also influencing people. So when this was spoken by Isaiah in sometime in the, perhaps in the 8th century BCE, it would appear that that's very, very likely when he spoke this prophecy. It can't be the 9th century, and it could only be the very early 7th century if it goes that far, but I don't think it goes that far, does it? Because he didn't prophesy in the time of Manasseh, did he? No. That's right. Manasseh was a son of Hezekiah. He didn't prophesy in the time of Manasseh, it doesn't say here in verse 1. So it can't be, but Isaiah did. No, that's right. Yes, very early 7th century. 696 is when Isaiah's kingship ended. 696 in the genealogy. So And that was the first year of Manasseh ruling. So it could have possibly been as late as the very early 7th century, but we don't need to know exactly. It's still long before Cyrus came to be the leader or the ruler of the Persian Empire. And so this saying at the end of chapter 44 of Isaiah was about Cyrus, and it also, when Cyrus read this, at the time when Cyrus came to be born, and later on to learn about this scripture, when he read that, it may have had an influence on his actions. Maybe he knew about this scripture before he even conquered Babylon. Perhaps that's what inspired him to conquer Babylon. It's quite a powerful thing when we think about what prophecy does and what it can do. It can really do things. It can really move people to take action. But yet these people who worship their false carvings, they're not people, but these are just carvings. These carvings cannot actually give them any help or give them any instruction. They're not like the true God, Jehovah, who instructs us daily. Every single day he instructs us, teaches us things. So I've been out, I drilled a hole in my wall today, in the south wall, so I could see whether I could possibly put a screw in the wall, and I did do that. I put a lag bolt in the wall, 4-inch, 5/16 diameter lag bolt, and that might be a point now. It is a point now where I can hook on any structure, any wall that I build, I can hook on to that at the bottom. So I now have 4 attachment points that are better situated now that I have that 4th attachment point. The other 3 already were there. But sometimes when you're designing something, you need to first of all do something. Similar to the idea of prophesying that Jehovah does, that he gets something in place first. Just like if I were to try and build something, but I didn't ever know whether I could drill a hole in that wall, I'd be setting myself up for failure. Because then when it came down to drill the hole, when it came to be time to drill that hole, I might find out, well, that doesn't work at all for some reason. So the first thing I decided I needed to drill this, that's the first aspect. That's the first part of the design process, was to drill the hole to figure out whether that idea is viable or not. Then I can say, now all I have to do is figure out a way to hook onto that bolt that's bolted through that hole into the wall. That bolt is strong enough to hold a lot of force from the wind, for example, if there's any wind blowing this wall. The other thing I learned the other day, very important, significant thing, the distance between the outer part of the aluminum trim on the corner of the house and the post to which the wall would be going, that distance of that span is exactly 68 inches, which meant nothing to me at the time I measured it. But when I looked at the recycled cedar that I have in the basement, it came from the front of my house where I had cedar paneling. All of the pieces of cedar paneling are 68 inches, I believe, very close to that. So that's significant because I can use that cedar. It's recycled red cedar, every piece that I have. And not only that, I figured out how many pieces I had and how wide it was. And, you know, it turned out to be, I think I worked it out to be exactly 68 inches in that direction too, in width. So when I put all the widths together, I get 68 inches. I think that's true as well. Well, I had something like, it was like each piece was 2 1/8. I'm always doing calculations because I'm an engineer and I like to design things. So 2 1/8 times 24. Is that right? How many pieces there were? Yeah, 51 inches. Plus, there were 5 or 6. 6 times 4 1/4. Okay, 76. Hang on. I don't remember the number. I don't remember it offhand, but I did write it down, like all the important things. I always write them down because I know I'm going to forget them anyway, because there's too many. There are too many of them to remember. There it is. Yeah. No. Okay. Wait a minute. No. 4. Well, there's 4 of them. No. 4 1/4 by 40. Okay. There are 6 of the 4 1/4 by 44. There are some 44-inch long pieces too. They came from smaller panels. But of the 4 1/4, there were only 4, not 6. Okay. Of the long ones, 68 inches long, 4. Of those. So yeah, it works out to exactly 68 inches. I mean, it's exact. So see, that I take that as, that's how I do my design work. When I do a calculation and I get an answer exactly equal to the number that I measured for the dimension. So now, because it's 68 inches long, and when I put them all together, they're 68 inches wide, what does that tell me? That tells me I can put them either vertically or I can put them horizontally, and they're still going to fill the 68 inches either way. So that tells me this recycled red cedar is the perfect material to use for this job, if possible. It's the perfect material. I just have to figure out how to make it strong enough, because cedar is not itself very strong. I have to build some kind of a space frame, maybe. A space frame is just a frame that you build to fill space. That's the definition of a space frame. It occupies space and it's a frame. That's what a space frame is. But in house construction, walls, the studs of walls with their bottom plates and top plates, those are space frames also. Everything or anything can be a space frame. And then you cover the space frame with a skin, perhaps, like the drywall in the case of a house, or the sheathing on the outside, which was some kind of fiberboard. Perhaps you cover it with that, or you might put some other type of skin on it, you know, some kind of weather protection or insulation or whatever. But the other thing is, in the case of what I'm talking about, I'm talking about putting the siding, cedar siding, onto a some kind of a stud wall of some kind. But I want it to be lightweight because I want to be able to lift it up and just hook it on and lift it off when I'm wanting to get access through that opening. I just want it to be a temporary, I don't mean a sliding wall, but a sliding, it can slide up and that gravity will hold it down. But if I can also put some means of holding it down that's a little bit better than gravity too, in case the wind is very strong and maybe some updrafts might lift it. So I may want to have some way to hold it down better than just by gravity, but that can be achieved fairly easily. And it's not really necessary if the wall has any kind of weight to it. But it would be unlikely for it to blow up and also in the right direction to dislodge itself. But all it would require is just one screw or two screws or, you know, one block of wood or something, one latch of some kind to stop it from moving up. And then it just hooks on. It can just hook on to the existing structure that's there, and, you know, hook on at the bottom as well as at the top. So it just locks in place, and then all that's needed is perhaps one screw to hold it in place, to keep it from moving up or down. I mean, to keep it from moving up, because it's already down once you install it. But that's it. That's my idea for the design, but there's so many details, it's just huge. The problem of any design that I have is always too many possibilities. So that's why when the numbers line up, like 68 is the same number, I don't even have to cut the wood. It's already 68 inches long. When that happens, that simplifies the design so much that it can only be from the one whom we call our Father. It can only be from Him that this happened, because that it's almost Him telling me this is the right plan. Your idea is the right idea, because there's the wood right there. It's already there in your basement. It was from my house originally, from the front of my house, and it's recycled red cedar, and it's the perfect, and there's the right amount of it. There's the right amount of it as well. Now, I don't know what I'm going to do about the smaller section that's triangular. It's off to one side of that wall. I don't know how that will be filled yet. Of course, there are some shorter pieces that are 44 inches long, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have enough of those. I don't know that we do, though. I haven't tried to calculate that, but I'll have to figure that out before I start building it. Probably I'll have to figure that out. But if I look at this number again, I have four pieces that are 2 1/8 by 44 inches long, and six pieces that are 4 1/4 by 44. Six times 4 1/4 is 24. I have about 10 inches. 6 times 4 1/4 is 24 plus something. Say 25 inches. It's about 2 feet. And then 4 times 2 1/8 is about 8 inches. 32 inches. It's not enough coverage, I don't think. Is it? Wait a minute. Well, it is. Wait a minute. There's 10 feet, but it's a triangle. So I only need 5 square feet. I shouldn't say 5 square feet. Five linear feet of whatever height it is what I really need. But no, it's only 4 feet. It's not 10 feet long. It's 6 feet plus 4 feet, so it's 4 feet of length. And the height would be starting at about maybe, I measured that distance. What was it? See. Down from the top. I measured the distance. There it is. 26 inches down to the stair crossing point. And 52 inches of the post to the footing. So it's about 26 inches then, is all that I have to fill. 26 inches high and 4 feet wide. It's like 2 by 2. Because it's 2 by 4, but it's a triangle instead of being rectangular. So it's half of 2 by 4. It's exactly four. It's almost exactly four square feet. So, I mean, these pieces that are 44 inches long. Those four in and of themselves almost are enough, because 6 times 4 is 24. That's the height part of it. 25 inches for the height. Yep, it looks like there's already enough material. So there's enough material to do the rest of the wall as well, it looks like. It's incredibly faith-strengthening when you find things, but I mean, I'm used to that. And my dad was the same way. He used to always find pieces of wood that exactly fit the purpose of what he was trying to do. That was a regular occurrence in our house, it seemed to me. He always was paying attention, though, to wait and watch for things to happen that would be aligned with the things he was trying to do. You know, he was looking for circumstances that would align with his own purposes, you know, and he seemed to be fairly reverent in that way about, you know, being waiting for Jehovah to point the way, that sort of thing. Yeah, so anyway, I think that's enough of a study for today. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the laundry. I did laundry. Before I did my shirts, I had to scrub them with bleach. So I used my new rubber gloves that I got recently. And I found when I was breathing the bleach in the bathroom with the door closed, that was a bad idea. And I quickly, or fairly, hopefully soon enough, I realized, but I didn't realize right away, but I was getting a sore throat from the bleach, which is a different kind of sore throat, because that kind of sore throat is not an infection. But I was getting a sore throat from breathing the bleach, and it's dangerous stuff. It's bad stuff. Even though it's oxygen bleach, it's still very caustic and bad for you. So I went and got my mask and put my respirator on, and it's an organic vapors mask it's a mask with organic vapor cartridges, and that protected me. So I finished scrubbing all my collars of my shirts, the ones that were dirtiest. My oldest shirts have been building up dirt in the collars for years and years, apparently. So the amount of filth and dirt that comes out of them when I scrub them with bleach is just, it's a very color-safe bleach, too. It's not going to damage the color. It's not Clorox, it's oxygen bleach. I could have just washed them in soap, but I think the bleach is even more effective. Anyway, it was very, very good to get the collars clean. I think I'm going to have a lot of nice, clean shirts, much better than they used to be, at least recently. They've been getting dirtier over the years, I guess, and I didn't notice them until I started noticing them quite a while ago, actually. But I haven't been able to get around to doing anything about it until just today. So all those shirts, I want to fold them up, and I want to get to work on that. So I enjoyed the study. I hope you did too. Little children, as Jesus would have called us all. Little children, because we are very insignificant in the eyes of God. We're very young or very small in God's eyes. Look at the promise of Isaiah 44, verse 3, I shall pour out water upon the thirsty one. Sounds very nice. And I shall pour out my spirit upon your seed and my blessing upon your descendants. It's nice too. I've noticed that I'm getting, my arthritis is acting up today, but I was out in the cold weather making measurements and doing some work with the bolting that bolt into the wall. Yeah, this finger is bothering me a little bit today, but, you know, I mean, I've taken a fair bit of vitamin K2. I know that the vitamin K2 can reverse the arthritis, but it doesn't always reverse the arthritis. I mean, it doesn't prevent the arthritis from forming in the first place necessarily, and it doesn't always reverse the arthritis immediately. Or it might be more complicated. There might be other factors, other vitamins that play a role in whether or not the arthritis flares up and whether or not it will be reversed. So every day is a learning experience. It's not, there's one more great piece of news, but it's not easy every day to figure out what food to eat. And you should not do anything unless you're very careful. That's very important. People, I don't want people to take some vitamin and then die. They should be very careful. Take very small quantities. Don't just, if you're going to, and only start taking vitamins when you're sure it's the right thing, or when you're sure that it's the right thing to try it. That's when you try it, and then you be very careful. Pay attention. Be open-minded and pay attention. Don't make up your mind in advance that it's going to be safe, because it may not be. That's important. I had another experience today with the monitor. I figured out how to get my monitor working at a high refresh rate again. And the way that I did it, okay, because I had to switch from, see, my Acer monitor was damaged by the power outage, apparently. So what happened, so that story I want to tell before I sign off here. We're almost done here, yeah. The monitor was damaged, but only, at least that's what I believe, because I wasn't able to get it to boot the M1 Mac Mini either, where the other Acer monitor, I have two of them, the top one, it can serve as the main boot monitor for the M1 Mac Mini. The lower one can't. Even using HDMI, it doesn't seem to be all that friendly. Although I got it working as the secondary monitor with the top one being the main monitor for the M1 Mac Mini. I had the two Acer monitors working with the Mac Mini, but the bottom monitor doesn't seem to work the way it used to. I can't use mainly the DisplayPort doesn't seem to function. It doesn't function using DisplayPort anymore. So I damaged the DisplayPort, and the DisplayPort input was the best quality input, I thought. But then I found out today I have this cable made by Xume, Xumee, Xume. They make a cable, or Xume, however you pronounce it. They make a cable which is an 8K HDMI. 8K HDMI. So it's very high quality. It can support 8K video over HDMI. When I plug that cable in, the difference between that cable and a standard HDMI that I was using was that the standard HDMI could only support 30 hertz refresh rate on my Acer monitor, because it's a very wide, it's a 3440 by something, by 1440, I think. 3440 by 1440. Yeah, it's very ultra-wide. It's an ultra-wide display. And so 30 hertz is all it could support, and that would mean my mouse was lagging. So when I was moving the mouse, I was getting lag. That was no good, because that's my main monitor. I can't have that. But then also, I was able to get it sometimes to increase to 50 hertz. But whenever I got it to, other times I couldn't see that option. There was no option to change it. But when there was an option to change it to 50 hertz, I changed it. This is yesterday. I was changing it to 50 hertz. But when I rebooted, everything was haywire. All the screens were back haywire. All the monitors were in line with each other. It didn't retain the configuration, the place where I'd put the monitors. The displays were all back into a random order. So that didn't work. But today, when I tried this new plug, the new cable, it's not a new one. I bought these all at the same time when I ordered these monitors. I bought all the cables I thought I might ever need. So I tried this cable for the first time, and it enables 100 hertz refresh rate, which isn't bad, because the other one can refresh at 144. 144 hertz, that's what these Acer monitors can do. But over HDMI, the other one's on DisplayPort. It's using DisplayPort 1.4, the top one. But since the bottom one can no longer use DisplayPort, I'm now using the bottom one with an HDMI cable that's an 8K HDMI cable made by Xume, X-U-M-E-E, as I said. And that is just a very high quality video cable. An HDMI cable, and it enables 100 hertz refresh rate. So the only problem with it is it doesn't boot 100% all the time. It did fail to boot one time. That monitor didn't come up one time when I booted, so I don't know if it's going to work well enough, but the other four or five times I booted, it worked. So it's hard to say how many times it will fail. But when it does come up, if it doesn't come up, I just reboot. But also, when it does boot properly, it's also got a longer delay. It takes longer for both of the Acer monitors to connect than the other monitors. So it might take 30 seconds instead of 20 seconds to boot or something like that, or 25 seconds instead of, you know, 18 seconds or whatever it is. So it's, you know, but it's still a fairly fast boot. If I only boot once per day, it's not going to be unworkable, certainly. It's very, very workable. But there are other options. I could put the Philips monitor in place of this one, I think. It fits. I have that option. I can exchange this, my bottom Acer monitor here. I can swap it with my Philips, which is a 4K monitor, and I just have to raise the top Acer up a little bit, a little higher, to make room for the Philips is a taller display, but it does fit. I measured it today, and I ascertained, yeah, it does work. So everything that I've got here can be reconfigured to some extent or other, and it seems like a fairly great extent that it can be reconfigured. So let's end it here, I think. But, I mean, the thing is, it's a challenge, and it's a pleasure to meet the challenge, and it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to share these things with you. As always, thanks for watching. It's December 4th, 2022. I'm Ward Green. It's 18:15 hours. And God bless you. Have a wonderful day. Bye for now.